The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome in, everybody. It is time for another award-winning edition of Kiefer and Curry. We team up every week to start your week off with something thought-provoking. And Tony and I have kind of developed into a pattern where we don't do any planning on this show. This is podcasting in its purest form, because one of us throws out a topic and the other one responds. It's usually Tony. I have to be full disclosure here. Tony usually comes up with the topic and I just play along, but I had some thoughts today. You know, Tony, we're recording this on Memorial Day. I just laid down this week's Need to Know, talking about the origins of Memorial Day. Thank you so much for that.
Very good.
But it occurred to me today that you and I have had similar lifespans and experiences over the years, and we're kind of born in not small town USA, but in places that were close to you close to the Cincinnati area, and my original childhood was in the Washington D.C. area and then Atlanta. But I kind of wanted to get your thoughts today on a day like this, a Monday holiday where everybody's off and whatnot. How have we departed? And I'm sure you had this experience when you were a kid, like I did, on these days, on Memorial Day and the 4th of July and Labor Day. There was always, it was usually like neighborhood or town centered. We had a community pool that was the source of a lot of ours, but there was always these massive gatherings. Mm-hmm. There were all these people from right where you lived, and it was all this interaction. It was like one of the best things of Americana back in that era of that's bygone now. And am I wrong? Maybe I'm just unpopular and don't get invited, but is that an aspect of American life that has completely disappeared?
I think it, and a great topic, by the way. I think it has to do with where you live. You know, when I lived up in Westchester, Ohio was undeveloped. We actually had cows in our backyard. We had a farm that backed up in our backyard. My dad bought a house in 1955. And by the way, when we sold it in 2015. When my dad passed away, the electric and the gas, it was a gas heater electric, was still running from 1955. And they bought the house. They're like, are you going to replace the air conditioner and the heater? I'm like, no, it still works. It worked for 60
years. That's amazing.
And was still running like a top.
How much did he pay for the house in 1955?
He paid $25,000 flat for that house, and it sold for $189 in 2015. So we all got a nice little chunk of change there. But and of course, that was a big day when you paid 30-year mortgage off, man. You had a party, you had a celebration. We I remember having a big. We had lamb. I never forget. My dad bought a side of lamb. We celebrated a side of lamb when the mortgage was paid off, and then when we had when he retired, we had a big celebration as well. No, but to get to your point, we used to have over 400 kids come through for Halloween. And when mm-hmm. I left when I was 18 or 19, we had like 12. And I think by the last year my dad lived, he said, I don't know if he handed out one piece of candy. And it's because that part of Westchester, which is about 25, 30 miles north of Cincinnati, about 45 miles south of Dayton, was a very rural. It hadn't been moved into yet. The homes were still, you know, 3-2s, but they were really small. They were 1,500 square feet. And yet we had a family of 6, and it felt like the place was huge to me. And so everything was encapsulated in the neighborhood. That's when you knew your neighbors. You know, I remember the Fies. I remember the Moffitts. I remember the Jacksons. I remember the Beelys. I can name every neighbor.
Me too.
On three or four sides of me, at least the Duncans. I remember, I can remember all the way down to the bottom of the park, the Becketts. I mean, and we all knew each other. No one moved. And maybe that was just the part of town that we lived in. And it was fantastic. Now, of course, Westchester is that hot spot where everyone wants to move out there because there's a lot of land out there, and Kings Island Music Park's out near Mason and right between Sharonville and Mason. So it's Beckett Ridge is a really famous area up in Cincinnati that just blew up. So I think more so, because I'm trying to think, I don't remember doing anything special with our family. We may have had a special meal, but back then, someone would get the grill fired up and people would just start showing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, we'd fire up the grill and the fires, you know, everyone lived, here's another thing. Everyone lived within shouting distance. I mean, there weren't garden homes by any stretch. We all had parcels of land. We lived on a just under an acre of land, which now seems like it's like forever. I mean, you had to have a riding lawnmower to cut grass in our neighborhood. And of course that came along and it was great. And when you bought a house, then you had land with it. It wasn't the garden homes didn't exist. But you always saw people out, you know, in the street. I always go back to April 3rd or April 4th, 1974. When the great tornado outbreak happened up in the tri-state area, and until recently, it may still be the biggest outbreak of tornadoes that we've ever had in this country. And I remember we didn't have sirens and we didn't have NOAA radios. We didn't have any of those things. And of course, when the electricity's off. And so for 26, 27 hours, we were in our basement. And whenever the wind wasn't blowing or it wasn't raining, we would walk out in the middle of a street and all the neighbors would get together, it'd be eight or nine of us. And we'd get together and talk for a few minutes. Then as soon as it started looking bad again, we'd all run back inside and go down to our basements. We did that for 26 hours because we didn't know. I mean, the only way you could tell if a tornado was coming was by eyesight, you know? And I remember my mom saying, you need to go upstairs and go to bed because you're going to have to go to school tomorrow. Of course, schools were canceled. Half the schools were gone. But that's just what neighborhoods were. And I miss that. I really miss not knowing our neighbors because yeah. I think when you have strong neighborhoods, you not only have better Memorial Days, but you look after each other's backs. I mean, I make sure when I move in, one of the things I moved out of Heatherwood, I had to move. The judge told me I had to sell the house during my divorce and I did everything I could. And I told the woman who bought my house, I said, it ain't the backyard and it's not the house. It's the neighbors. I mean, the best part about this house is the neighbors. Get to know your neighbors. They've lived in this neighborhood for 20 years and they're fantastic. And I miss great neighbors. I think that's a big part of this country that we're missing out on. Now people move. Now people are just buying houses and selling houses, switching houses, doing everything else. And you just don't have that neighborhood of feel, which I think has a lot to do with why we don't have great Memorial Days or celebrations, well, as it were.
I moved it to this location out in Trustville in April of 2023. So I've just passed the 2-year mark here.
Yeah.
Tony, this is a massive neighborhood I live in. I do not know one soul. I have not met anyone. I have not talked to anyone. It's bizarre. I live on up a hill. There's only six houses on this immediate street, but right at the bottom of the hill and right behind me, there are two houses within sight. I mean, I can stand in my driveway and pretty much see, you know, 9 or 10 houses, and there's a massive neighborhood here, but I don't think they do anything organized. I don't think people interact hardly at all. When we moved to Atlanta in 1968 from the Washington, D.C. suburbs, I lived in Rockville, Maryland. I sound like one of the Flintstones. we moved to Atlanta in 1968. We bought a house in like the biggest boom neighborhood called Dunwoody North, which is about 20 minutes away from downtown. But this neighborhood was so popular because that was the first big suburb that was really developed there. We had four of the Atlanta Braves at the time who had moved from Milwaukee, lived in the neighborhood. One of them, Dennis Menke, the shortstop, was my next door neighbor, which was the greatest thing that ever happened to a 9-year-old kid. That was just amazing. Cotton Fitzsimmons, who was the coach of the Atlanta Hawks, lived four houses up from us on North Peachtree Road. So everybody who was anybody lived in this neighborhood, and everybody, I mean, the community was so interacting. Everybody got along. Our family, our first house, I asked you that question because I knew it would be an amazing answer in the 50s. In 1968, moving to that exclusive neighborhood, my parents bought a 4-bedroom house with a gigantic backyard that I converted, of course, into my own personal football field. And we used that giant space to host all kinds of barbecues and parties, Halloween, 4th of July, Labor Day, Memorial Day. The entire neighborhood would come. It was a can't miss kind of deal. 4th of July was particularly funny every year. I skipped on to the next thing. When they bought that house in 1968, Tony, okay, get ready for this. In the most exclusive neighborhood in Atlanta, $57,000. Wow. Wow. I mean, that house now.
Hey, back in our day, you know, $100 of groceries would get you through 2 weeks. And if you owned a six figure house, you were something special.
$57,000 for this gigantic house right on North Peachtree Road. It's just inconceivable that the prices and things were different. But on 4th of July, all the dads, they came a couple weeks before. The first year we did it, I think, was in 1969. They built this. They brought their shovels. They did this massive barbecue pit, mm-hmm. and had like these like fencing metal deals, and all the dads from the entire neighborhood, like at 10 o'clock on the morning of the 4th of July, they were all there. They had these massive coolers and buckets and tubs of beer, ice down. They started cooking early in the morning that day, and they had the giant paint brushes to slather on sauce all day. It was ribs and burgers and chicken. I mean, it was such a spectacle. I wish I had photos of the production this was, but I'm talking like 40 dads out there starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and people started gathering early in the afternoon, and it was just an all day deal up until dark. Of course, all of my friends and people from the neighborhood, we just got into impromptu wiffle ball games, or we played strikeout, which was
you did lawn darts.
Oh, yeah.
Croquet.
That was a little, yeah, croquet for sure. Lawn darts were a little bit later on until my friend Joe Lipham threw one up in the air, and then he started screaming. He goes, "It went through my toe. It went completely through my toe." So we had to do some quick mash work to revive Joe Lipham. But the bottom line is, at night, after the dads have been there drinking from like 10 o'clock in the morning till dark, like 8:30 in the middle of the summer, then they would break out all the fireworks that they brought, yep. Tony, for a drunken celebration of, and that was always, you had to be a little loose on that, because about two out of every three bottle rockets would get knocked over, and you would be sitting like on the swing set watching, go incoming, and everybody had to dive out of the way. But
remember M80s, everyone had whoever had the box M80s, you could buy M80s. And for people who don't know, they look like little sticks of dynamite, and they were little sticks of dynamite. Oh. One dumbass would always put one under his shoe. I know everyone would say, who's going to put one under their foot? It would blow. Oh. Yeah.
So stupid. I mean, they were powerful enough where, you know, in my, I was never a delinquent, but it seemed like a funny prank at the time. It would piss me off now if it was still being done, but you'd stick one in somebody's mailbox and run away, yep. And would blow it to smithereens.
My brother, Jeff, actually over the course of 4 years in high school, took every M80 he had and opened it up and saved the gunpowder.
Oh gosh.
And put it in a test tube that he got from school. Now this is 1981, 82. Had a police officer or anyone come into our basement and seen, I mean, it had to be like a paint can full of black powder.
Unbelievable.
We never knew. And I was like, what the hell is it? He's like, oh, I'm gonna make the biggest damn bomb I can ever make in my life. Jeez. It had to be 1,000 M80s. And I don't remember what happened to that black powder, but I'm thinking to myself, that thing will blow up. I mean, back then it was just like, you know, hey, did you see what the Currys did the other night? They blew up a bunch of black powder stuff. Let me tell you something about, so I was 18 and I was working at this radio station, WSKS, was Kiss 96 and then Rock 99 or 96 Rock up in Hamilton, Ohio. The station got sold. I was 17, 18 years old, and Randy Michaels was the GM of J-Core. It was J-Core Radio and then Clear Channel Radio. He was huge in the industry. This is the mid-80s. And I remember at 18, I was doing 10 at night till 2 in the morning. On 96 Rock, I was working four different jobs, working at Kentucky Fried Chicken. I was going to college. I was doing all these things. And so I told him, I said, listen, I said, whatever it is, I want to stay in radio. Everyone was telling me that I was going to get fired. Everyone's going to get fired because they're bringing in their own crew and our station. We competed against a monster called WEBN, which is still around. And so I went to Randy and said, listen, I desperately want to stay in radio. I'll do whatever it takes to stay in radio. So he got me a job at WQMF in Louisville, Kentucky, with this guy named Alan Sells. And I said, great. So I asked my mom and dad, I said, can I have a little going away party? And my mom said, sure, you know, invite some of your friends, blah, 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 out to our house in Westchester. So Randy Michaels had gotten to know my mom and dad pretty well. They just love my mom and dad. And we were at some gathering for WLW, which also owned 96 Rock, that was our sister station, WLW. Having known all this stuff, I could have stayed put and I probably would have found a job because I was doing pretty well at the time. Anyway, he told my mom, he said, if you make me a rhubarb pie, Jane, my mom's name is Jane. My dad's name was Dick. It was Dick and Jane.
Said, oh, how about that?
Yeah, Dick
and Jane. Did you have a dog named Spot?
We should have. We didn't have dogs, but and Puff the cat. And he said, if you make me a rhubarb pie, I will come to the party.
Oh boy!
And my mom said, well, you know, Mister So and So, you got yourself a deal, Randy Michaels. We'll make you a rhubarb pie. So I gather, you know, I went around school. I think I was a senior in high school, and I got together with several people, and I told some people, blah 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 blah. Long story short, about 350 people showed up in our house.
Wow.
Smoking, drinking. People brought their own kegs of beer. There had to be 10 kegs of beer. I don't know. I was seeing people that I hadn't seen since kindergarten. I don't know. And I don't know how they knew what was going on. I don't know what was going on. All I knew is the next day, my sister was having a graduation party at the house. And so we were going to have to clean up. But anyway, and so it just got really massive, really fast. I was with some really overweight girl with huge breasts underneath the crabapple tree outside my bedroom. I had her top up and my mom was looking out the window at me. And she was like, what are you doing? I vividly remember, I was thinking to myself, and I remember we had these things called, there's these bugs called chiggers. You get chigger bites, and these chiggers, they're not mosquitoes. They don't bite you. They get in your skin. The only way to kill them is
they burrow underneath them. Yeah.
You have to put like nail polish over top of them to suffocate them. So I remember the next day, man, I had chigger bites in the top because I was in these high weeds with this girl topless rolling around. Of course, I was a virgin at the time. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Anyway, about 1 o'clock in the morning, you hear this. And I'm going, what the hell's going on? And there's a helicopter.
It's
flying around our backyard, and it's the 700 WLW flying helicopter that does our traffic during the day. It lands in our backyard at 1:15 in the morning. Randy Michaels is in, he's in with this guy named Mad Dog, who is a huge smoker. He opens the door, and it's like Spicoli. The smoke just comes rushing out. If you're within 100 yards of this helicopter, you get high as a kite. And he's out there. The blades are still going, and he goes, I'm here for my rhubarb pie. And my mom runs out there in one of her favorite moo-moos, she's out there. She's got her underwear on, her moo-moos, and she brings out a rhubarb pie and gives it to Randy Michaels.
Unbelievable story. And they fly
away. And I mean, that was Memorial Day. That's what happened, man. We just throw a party. Next thing you know, we had three. And I remember the next day, I was so flipping hungover. At that time, you had to be 18 to drink. I was so flipping hungover. And my mom looked at me and she said, last night, you are not my son. And it hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
I said, what? She goes, last night, you are not my son. She goes, I saw what you did under that crabapple tree, and your friends are crazy, and I don't ever want to see a party like that in our house again. And everyone talked about that party for a long time. And it took me like 15 hours because all day I spent out in the hot summer sun picking up cigarette butts out of the backyard because my sister had a party later on that evening.
Oh,
that
boy.
Was the party we had.
What
that
a story.
Yeah, but that was what happened in our neighborhood. Could you imagine landing a radio station helicopter in someone's backyard in Birmingham, Alabama? I mean,
the
news it would attract. It was crazy. It was crazy. It was great.
Well, but it gets back to my original premise, though. I mean, I think epic gatherings like that were not out of the norm. Yours certainly was with a helicopter landing in the middle of the festivities. You trying to get somebody's shirt off, I don't think was a real shocking development at that stage of your life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your mother expected, unless she was thinking you were going to go into the priesthood, not into radio.
She held that against me for a long time.
That's so ridiculous. But anyway, I lament a little bit the fact that, you know, there's not a neighborhood gathering here today to go to.
I think you got to form it. You know, right now, all we got is these neighborhood associations, and no one likes NASs because they're a pain in the ass. It costs you $300. You don't see
what
they do.
You can't park on the street.
There's a sign outside my house right now. I'm not part of the neighbor association because I'm renting the house, and it says, don't forget your dues. Don't forget your dues for Russert, it's Russert Homes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, But you know, it's funny because I've never lived in a neighborhood with a black person.
That's crazy.
Until I lived in Heatherwood, and I lived in Heatherwood, and a black family moved in down the street. And I only know they were a black family because they used to have these barbecues. Uh-huh. They'd have these gatherings. They'd have, and they would invite all their black friends. And of course, all the white folks in our neighborhood, that would make them feel really edgy. They'd get really like, hey, you know, the black people are having another party again on Saturday. I'm like, well, look out for the black people. And they'd call them the Jeffersons. You know, the Jeffersons are having another throwdown.
You know,
look out, you know, lock your car doors. The Jeffersons are having another party. And I'm like, oh, would you stop? And so I would stop down there. They had two Sharpays, one named Salt, one named Pepper. They were black and white. And I'd stop in there and I go, please have more parties, because when you guys have parties, you have the best food. And of course, I knew these people.
Yeah.
And then when we moved in here, Russell Woods, I realized that there are more black people living in my neighborhood than white people, which I didn't matter. I just cared about the home.
No.
I wanted to make sure I had a home big enough for my kids and it was clean. There wasn't any crime. I didn't really care. And it's amazing. My daughter's like, you know, Dad, we have a lot of black people living in our neighborhood. I said, we do. I said, we should get to know these people. We should go.
Yeah.
You know, so we got the people across the street that we actually know. We know their two kids, the people next door to us, the people next to the left of us are white, but it's just important. And I always tell my kids, I don't care who you are, where you're at, wave. You must wave to everybody in our neighborhood. I don't care if you're driving, walking, talking, whatever it is. I want to see a hand up, and I want you waving because I want people to know that the Currys are cool. And the next time someone sees someone doing something weird around the Curry residence, I know we're going to be looked after.
Well, I applaud a lot of the African American culture, because I think they embrace still these gatherings and these times for interaction and what the hell's wrong with our peeps, Tony? It's almost really? Like the world's just gotten totally impersonal, and I would just like to attend right before I check out. I would just like to attend one more epic gathering, because I miss those. That was a huge part of my childhood and my early life.
You had a party. When did you have a party? Was it about a year ago? And I could not make it, but you had
Yeah, that was on July 4th of 2023.
Yeah. That did turn out pretty well, right?
Yeah, we had probably 25 or 30 people, which in this day and age is like a massive gathering.
I know, right?
But it was kind of a housewarming, because like I say, we just moved in April of 2023.
I got a deal with Super Show Fireworks. I can bring some fireworks if you want. They're not M80.
Oh, okay.
They will wake up the neighborhood.
Yeah. I just have such great memories of those gatherings in Dunwoody North. And like I say, some of them, that weren't at our house, because we had probably the best location and the best setup for it. But you could go right through the wooded area to the pool and the Dunwoody. And I never to this day understood. It was the Dunwoody North Driving Club was the name of the pool. I don't know what driving had to do with it. I still don't understand that. DNDC. But they had some nice gatherings too, but that was a part of almost every one of these holidays where people were off work.
Now did you have the neighbors you weren't allowed to see? The neighbors you had to stay away from?
Not really. I mean, there were some.
Every neighborhood has them now. Yeah. We had a family living to our left. This guy named Danny got a bad hit of acid in 1979. And if you drive up to Westchester, Ohio, you will still see him. He's got to be in his 70s. You will still see him walking around the park. He walks around the park all day, every day. And he's in his 70s. And his name is Danny, and everyone knew. And his sister, her name was Sherry. She used to lay out in the backyard topless because the backyards didn't butt up against each other. And of course, I would do my homework every Saturday in my bedroom, lock the door, and take my dad's binoculars out. I would watch Sherry topless out of the back of the window in my bed. My dad says, "You doing your homework in there?" I was like, "Yes, sir, I sure am." And I'd get my books out and stuff like that. But we always had, but I was always told that they were the Holloways. I was always told stay away from the Holloways because Danny one time jumped out. Jumped out the window. His dog tried to bite him, and so he jumped out the plate glass window. But there was always those neighbors that we were always told to stay away from. Everyone had them in their neighborhood, but we still would look after them. You know, we'd still take care of them if they needed anything.
Yeah, it was a whole different time. You know, I it ended for me. when I was, I don't know, we were that we moved there in 68 by, the early 70s when my elementary school was winding down. We've kind of stepped away from that kind of lifestyle because at that time my folks had reached kind of an impasse, and they actually divorced in 1972, which in 1972, Tony, that was like shocking. Yeah. You didn't have family divorces. My dad had he'd been an only child. My dad was kind of a wild guy from the standpoint of, you know, he wanted to have, and a lot of the good part of that was he was one of the major organizers in the neighborhood responsible for all that social life. But as he got a better jobs and started to travel more, his eye got a little wayward, and you know, he didn't cover up very well, and my mother knew it. And so, the next 5 or 6 years of my life, I was mortified that my family had dissolved, and I was so embarrassed. I didn't even tell anybody. My dad travels a lot, you know.
I'm trying to think, if we had anybody in our neighborhood, because we were really close, but I mean, I could think to myself, was anyone fooling around in our neighborhood? But I don't think it was happening.
Well, there was always, and I've heard now from my peers who I knew all of their parents growing up, people that are still people I went to high school with and still are friends on Facebook. Somebody from that year will pass away, and I'll have somebody send me did you know she was fooling around with so-and-so back in the day? And I did not know. Don't ruin my idyllic memories of my neighborhood. So
that is hilarious.
I mean, we were just getting into the part where, you know, society was changing in the 70s and into the 80s. So, you know, people kind of intimate that a lot of these adult gatherings, there might have been some swinging things or things like that.
Yeah, we may have been better off not to know.
Yeah, I don't want to know any about
there was
it.
There was a guy named Scott Moffitt, who was my friend. He was 3 years younger than I was. His dad was the superintendent of Westchester Schools, Lakota Schools, and he lived on the street corner. And his wife, her name was Linda. She was just a smoking hot. And I guess at the time I was maybe 14 or 15, and then Scott was maybe 8 or 9, 9 or 10. And he would call me and say, "Hey, Becky Wallace is coming over to watch me today." Becky Wallace was this girl that lived on the other side. I call it the park, but it was just a circle. But yeah. Becky Wallace is coming over to watch me today. And so I would go over there, and we play wiffle ball and we play home run derby, this, that, and the other. And then one time we were sitting there, and she's like, "Does anyone want to play truth or dare?" And I was like, "Oh, I'll play truth or dare." You know, so we keep doing the truth thing, truth thing. She's like, "Oh, we're not going to do any daring." And so I, you know, eat a bug or eat a worm, whatever.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
Like, does not even no one wants to see my breasts? And I was like, I may have been 12, he may have been 9, because he was young enough to have a babysitter, and I was like. I was like, "Well, yeah, I guess." So she closed the garage door. We went in the garage door, and she lifted her top. And every time it came around to her turn, she would do a dare. And I'd go, "Well, you know what I want?" And so I'd ask her. And so she'd always say dare. And so that garage door went up and down about 35 times.
Wow. Boy, I tell you, I missed out not being raised in rural Ohio, because it sounds like there was a lot of that bearing of breasts thing.
We did have. Come to think of it, that was a hell of a great neighborhood. It was a great neighborhood. It really was. I mean, I had a girl down the street, and then,
That's your third breast anecdote in one broadcast.
Come to think of it.
Place to be.
Helicopters landing in the backyard. That was a hell of a great day. Thanks for bringing that up. That makes me feel good about our neighborhood we lived in. Yeah, I never moved.
My Atlanta suburb was boring compared to that.
That's hilarious. Well, you know what? All I could tell you to do is, and I said I'd do this at my old house. I told my daughter, I said, I need to have a get together just go ahead and get about 100 hot dogs, 100 buns, and put some music out in the driveway and just tell everyone, put everything in a mailbox. Hey, come to my house from 1 to 4 next Saturday and we'll just get to know each other. And maybe that would be something we could do in this neighborhood. I guess it's because I'm sure there's a lot of people here that I don't know. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, by knowing our neighbors, we'd all feel a lot safer and it would be a better place to live in. But, you know, too many people are moving around too fast, I guess.
Yeah, it's just a sad thing that we've kind of gotten away from, because I think that's a big, you know, I was talking about Memorial Day before, and that's what made me think about this. But I think that was a big part of America in yesteryear, that you did know your neighbors and you did depend on each other and you did form those relationships. And now so many relationships are just artificial because so much of it is online and it's impersonal. And, you know, I still... some of my longest term friends, every once in a while, as I sit here, I wax poetic and maybe stroll into some areas that I shouldn't disclose about my own disappointments or things that I'd like to see different. And I get feedback. People goes, why do you do that? You know? And it's like, you can't be who you are around anybody now. Cause it's like makes people uncomfortable. And that's, right. I think that's really a sad thing.
You know, the other thing too, and I'm so glad you brought this up. Your neighbors were your neighbors. We don't get along with everybody.
No, I mean, of course not.
We don't. And people are different. And thank goodness we had, you know, the one thing that made us really close is they had the neighbors across the street had 3 kids my age. The neighbors next door had 2 kids my age.
Yeah.
Left doors with Sherry. She was older. But they had Danny and Mike and a couple other, but they were older. But they were friends with my brother, who was 7 years older than I was. And even though we didn't get along, we figured it out. We lived in the same neighborhood. You know, my dad would always cut 2 or 3 extra lanes of grass over in the Fye neighborhood. And then when the Fyes came over, they'd cut 2 or extra lanes, and that we'd always do little things for ourselves.
Oh, how about that?
My dad one year, and this is back in the '90s. You remember the wood reindeer that used to put out in front of the front yard and then put a searchlight on it. Well, my dad put a light out, put a reindeer out there with a searchlight. My next door neighbor was a hunter. He got a cutout of a hunter with a gun, and it was shooting at my dad's deer from across the way with a light on it saying Merry Christmas. I mean, we just did things for each other like that. When my dad had a retirement party and got so drunk that he passed out on the back deck, I could go over to my next door neighbors and say, hey, my dad passed out again. Could you come over and help me put him in his chair? You know, I mean, that's the kind of neighborhoods we had. The other day, you know, I ran out of gasoline and I had to make a phone call, and my next door neighbor's Chris is like, hey dude, anytime you need anything, man, he knows who I am and he knows who you are. He's like, tell Kip I said hi. And I said, I certainly will. And he listens to our podcast all the time. And I said, man, I said, you know, anything I could do for you, but you know, to go across the street and borrow an egg, good luck. I don't even know if you'd know the people to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, if I hear that down here in my subterranean compound with my home theater and my studio that I'm sitting coming to you right at this moment, if my doorbell rang right now, I would probably not go answer the door. I'd go peek out the blind and go,
would do the same thing. And I've said that I moved into a house 839 Street South, right across from Highland Golf Course. God love this woman. And I'm so sorry, but I moved in and I was I was in all kinds of crap back then. This is the mid-90s.
Yeah.
She came over to my house, I'm not kidding you, at least 10 times with a pie and knocking on the door to welcome me to the neighborhood. And I, of course, would just get really quiet because I didn't want anyone to bother me. And I just was like, you know, whoever that woman is, I apologize. She was trying to be a nice neighbor and I was just a pain in the ass. But yeah, you're right. Now when someone knocks on the door, you just figure someone's trying to sell you something.
Yeah, it can't be good news.
Yeah, no.
It's not somebody coming to, you know, they're either going to share the miracle of their faith or try to sell you.
I had some Jehovah's over here last week. Yeah, sure did.
Yeah,
2 girls on a bicycle. I was like,
oh my gosh.
So what? Okay, what's going on? She's like, have you been to church today, sir? And I was like, well, it is Sunday. Sure, I do. And she goes, what you have liked to say? I said, sure, come on over here. Unless you're a nun, we'll have a conversation. So I
and you probably said I'm Catholic, and they said we have to leave.
She said, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
She said, I'm so sorry, sir. I said, it's okay. We're all right. She goes, well, how entrenched are you in the Catholic religion? I said, well, I'm a lector. I read, and I almost became a priest when I was 18. She's like, that's enough for me. She walked off. Anyway.
I had real quick, one final thing.
Yeah.
But since you brought that faith up, I had a girl in my high school class. I think I was only in eighth or ninth grade, and she was, we had a tank farm, you know, the big storage units for gasoline in neighboring Doraville. And one morning, like 6 o'clock, there was these massive explosions. Somehow a couple of them just blew up and it was causing this raging inferno. But of course, that didn't prevent school from being on because it would take a nuclear weapon to do that. So we're at school and this girl named Catherine Seville, who I've never heard from since or in modern day, but she was a Jehovah's Witness. And this is just the beginning. God said the next, the next scourge on earth or whatever wouldn't be a flood. It would be fire. And I'd say, and he planted for Doraville, Georgia. I find that a little hard to believe. She goes, yep. And I'm just trying to establish, Tony, I was a certified smart ass in the seventh or eighth grade, because she said, well, you know, only 80,000 people who are true believers are going to be transported to the paradise, you know, and the rest of them are going to have to stay behind and suffer through the second, you know, major cataclysm of the earth. Yeah. And I said, 75 or 80,000. So what do you have? Like, I have to have like a ticket stub, the Ohio State Michigan game to qualify, you know? So I'm a smart ass today, but those roots go deep.
Don't remember seeing Dunwoody in the New Testament, but it may have been in there. I may have to read my Bible again. Possibly. That's hilarious. Well, listen, if you're looking for a good neighborhood show, a good show that's local. Certainly people in the Birmingham area love it. We're number one in our time spot, 10:30, 11 o'clock, ABC 3340. Check it out. Of course, we talk about a little bit everything. We had a lot of horse racing going on. We got Major League Baseball, the NBA and NHL playoffs. But certainly a lot of sports talk about, along with Legend. And of course, your son, who does a fantastic job, the Picks in the Desert. We'll do ABC 3340's starting lineup again, coming up on Saturday morning at 10:30.
This week, we're scheduled to have Brent Pinkston, who is the chief operating officer of the Porch Band of Creek Indians, who have just bought the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. We're going to be able to ask Brent, what's the goal? Why was that acquisition important to your organization? What are your plans to bring it to sort of a brand new level? So I'm really looking forward to hearing Brent has to say. And people need to appreciate, Tony, this is a small tribe. They now have holdings in seven different states, different entertainment facilities, and two in the Caribbean. Yeah. So this is a very ambitious outfit, and it's exciting times for the Birmingham entertainment situation. I know they have plans to build a full scale entertainment complex that would be able to host big events and concerts and comedians and kinds of things. So
it's such a great track of land out there too. It's essentially located everywhere. It's 20 or 30 minutes
right off 459.
And you know, I'd love to see, I know you would too, I'd love to see the horses back, but that's a question we can take.
Absolutely. We'll ask Brent on. So next Saturday morning, 10:30, don't miss that show. Cause I've met Brent. He's a very engaging guy. I think people in Birmingham are going to really like to hearing from him.
Great stuff. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you, man.
Tony, thank you. Another award-winning edition of Kiefer and Curry.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.